Application Academy is closing if you are applying to medical school in 2024 to start in 2025. We are closing in mid-April, April 12th or 13th, somewhere around there, somewhere in mid-April. We're closing our door. It's time for you to get in to Application Academy to get the support you need to put together your story so that you aren't one of those students that end up rejected because you didn't know how to tell your story. Come join us at applicationacademy.com. Use the promo code podcast for a little extra discount. Use the promo code podcast for a little extra discount. I'll see you soon at applicationacademy.com. The pre-med path can be super confusing. If you'd love some help on your path or on your applications, use the promo code PMY for pre-med years, PMY, over at medicalschoolhq.net and get some help from some of our experts, former directors of admissions, admissions officers, other experts. We have a small team ready to help you today. Again, that's promo code PMY to get a discount on our services at medicalschoolhq.net. The Medical School HQ podcast, session number 73.
And quite honestly, I think it happened after OCHEM. OCHEM hit me like a sack of bricks. It was brutal. I didn't do terrible. I mean, I ended up getting like a B and I think a B minus. And so everyone out there, you can get a B in OCHEM and still get into med school. It can happen. But I did that. I'm like, wow, is this like really what I'm going to be studying? Are these the things type of information that I'm going to be learning? It just caused me to second guess, that's for sure. And so that was my junior year that I was like, you know what, maybe this hard science stuff isn't for me. So I started looking into physical therapy and whatnot for a while.
Hey, this is Z-Dog MD, rapper, physician, legendary turntable health revolutionary, and part-time gardener. And you're listening to the Medical School HQ podcast, hosted by the irredeemably awesome Ryan Gray.
Welcome back. I am your host, Dr. Ryan Gray, and I believe that competition amongst your pre-med and medical student peers is detrimental to becoming a great physician. In this podcast, we show you how collaboration, hard work, and honesty are critical to becoming a superior physician in today's healthcare environment. I welcome you back, and just as I announced last week, I'm excited to say that the Princeton Review is continuing to support us here at the medical school headquarters by offering you an amazing exclusive discount. For the month of April, when you use the code MSHQ4 at checkout, you will save $225 off the Princeton Review's MCAT Ultimate Classroom or MCAT Ultimate Live Online course. If you haven't yet, go back and listen to session 17, which you can find at medicalschoolhq.net/17 to hear one of their top instructors give his best tips for the MCAT and listen to some of the great things that the Princeton Review has to offer. Again, use the promo code MSHQ4 at checkout on their site, princetonreview.com, to save $225 off the Princeton Review's MCAT Ultimate Classroom or MCAT Ultimate Live Online course. Thank you again to the Princeton Review for continuing to support us here at the Medical School Headquarters podcast. I also wanted to talk for a second again about the Academy at the Medical School Headquarters, an online membership site to help you through the pre-med and medical school process. With live monthly office hours, think Google Hangouts, but with pre-med students and me, monthly live webinars covering everything from the MCAT to financial aid, you can't afford not to join. Start investing in your future now and join the Academy. One of our newest members, Melissa, offered this to say during our latest office hours.
This is such a wonderful thing you guys have put together. I mean, I can see even just in the design and what you're adding, just how much effort has gone into it. I think it's beautiful. And I mean, as we were doing this, I kind of could imagine myself a few years down the road being a part of it and helping people who are kind of going through what I'm going through now and vice versa. So this is awesome.
Come join Melissa, Allison, and myself and so many other great minds. Go to jointheacademy.net today to sign up. In today's podcast, I actually have an Academy member joining us as the guest. Jordan Renicki is a non-traditional student who is starting medical school this fall. Congratulations, Jordan. He was a student athlete during his undergrad years as a baseball player. He started as a pre-med, but during that time, he looked into a few other career fields, and he kept coming back to medicine. During this interview, Jordan will share his experiences and why he, in the long run, decided medicine was right for him. Listen to why he got sidetracked after OChem and why he wasn't very happy when he learned what classes pre-meds took. Learn the thought processes that he used that maybe you can apply in your own situation, and learn what the AMCAS application was like for him. Jordan, thank you for becoming one of our first listeners turned guests on the podcast. Let's start with when you decided medicine was right for you.
Well, I guess there's actually two points in my life where I thought medicine's right for me. The first was right out of high school. Junior year, I took an anatomy class and I loved it. We got to dissect a cat. Our cat ended up being pregnant, so that was pretty fun and exciting. But I just fell in love with anatomy. I'm like, this is awesome. I want to be a doctor. Went into college and right away, you know, did the pre-med thing, and my advisor had all the classes for me, and I didn't quite understand what that all what it meant. I thought I'd be taking anatomy classes because that's what I loved, and I was like, wait, why am I taking all these biology and chemistry classes? And I wasn't super psyched about that. But I started off pre-med, and then I kind of trailed off a little bit after OChem sophomore year and junior year. And then post-graduation, about a year post-graduation, I finally decided again that it was indeed right for me. And then I've been pursuing that and got accepted after that.
Oh, you're jumping way ahead. Got accepted. Yay. Congratulations, first of all. Oh. But we'll get to that. So
I'm sorry.
No, that's okay. That's okay. I'll get you back on track. So let's go back to high school. You got, okay, I'm going to be a doctor. I dissected a cat. That's the same thing for me. I had some other experiences as well, but dissecting a cat was one of those big moments, like, yes, I love cutting things. Mm-hmm. And so from there, where did you go to undergrad?
So I went to two schools, actually, in undergrad. I went to a small private Catholic school in La Crosse, Wisconsin, for a little bit. And then I transferred after that to a smaller state school in Wisconsin as well. So I went to two different places, but I graduated from the state university in Wisconsin.
Did you research pre-med programs at those schools, or did you go to those schools for other reasons?
I was on baseball scholarship at the first school, and then it was kind of crazy hectic. It was just too much with baseball and that school. It was just, they didn't emphasize schoolwork enough for me. So I transferred out to another school that had a really good baseball program. And I didn't look at the pre-med programs once. I just kind of went where baseball was and figured school was school. I'll make it what it is.
Okay. So student athlete. Do you think that played into your decision not to pursue pre-med in the end at that time?
You know, it wasn't really, I wouldn't say that it deterred me from doing it. I mean, I always kept my grades up and school was always the most important thing for me, but it definitely did keep me busy and it gave me other options too. You know, being involved in sports, I was injured a couple of times. I was exposed to physical therapy and whatnot. And for a while I thought that's what I was going to do. So I guess, yeah, it kind of helped steer me away for a little bit, but it didn't hinder me in the end.
Okay. So grade wise, it didn't hinder you at all?
No. Well, I mean, sometimes second semester in the spring was tough because we were traveling. Baseball, we'd play Wednesday and then Saturday, Sunday. And in Wisconsin, we got snowed out a bunch. So we'd play Monday games and Wednesday, and we'd miss so much school. And regionals, every year regionals ended up during the finals week. So we'd find out what seed we were. I'd tell all my teachers Monday, hey, I have to leave Wednesday to go play in the NCAA regionals. And then I'd take all my exams pretty much like Tuesday and Wednesday morning and have to move all my exams up early. And those, yeah, sometimes the GPA suffered those semesters when you had a day to study for like three exams, but...
Okay. So at what point do you remember specifically when you said, okay, I'm not going to be pre-med anymore? Or was it a decision that you just said, I'm going to delay this?
Yeah, it wasn't necessarily, I'm not going to be pre-med anymore. It was just like, I should probably look at other options too. Because, and quite honestly, I think it happened after OChem. OChem hit me like a sack of bricks. It was brutal. I didn't do terrible. I mean, I ended up getting like a B and I think a B minus. And so everyone out there, you can get a B in OChem and still get into med school. It can happen. But I did that. I'm like, wow, is this like really what I'm going to be studying? Are these the things, type of information that I'm going to be learning? It just caused me to second guess, that's for sure. And so that was my junior year that I was like, you know what, maybe this hard science stuff isn't for me. So I started looking into physical therapy and whatnot for a while.
Okay. What do you remember about OChem and maybe some of your other pre-med classes? What was it about those classes that kind of caught you off guard?
I guess the first thing was just like the amount of time you need to commit to it. In most classes you studied for a little bit and it was fine. And I was always, you can ask my roommates, I was always a notorious. I studied so much. Like Friday night was my library time. It was, every Friday night I'd go to the library and then come back, and Saturday afternoon in between football games, I'd go, to the study. So I was always studying. So that wasn't an issue in terms of time commitment, but just volume information in OChem and just the amount of repetition you needed to get it really didn't stick with me. And I'm not a very three-dimensional guy. OChem to me was a nightmare, just because once we got into stereochemistry, it was just, I was gone. I was lost. I didn't handle it very well, but it helped. And then looking in retrospect, if I'd go at it now with the attitude I had when I studied for the MCAT, or, just even working, I don't think it'd be an issue at all, because it's just, it takes some time. That's really all it is.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So you graduated. What did you do after graduation?
Yeah. So I was the stereotypical college kid graduating and not really having an idea what they're doing, but I graduated and I was like, okay, that's good. I did the 5-year plan. So that was fun.
And when did you graduate?
2012. Okay. 2012. So that was good. I did the 5-year with baseball and transferring. I just needed an extra year. So my 5th year was without baseball. So that was nice. I got to work in the exercise physiology lab and stuff. So anywho, I graduated in 2012 and I came home and I didn't really know what to do. I mean, I knew I needed to start looking for a job, but at this point I thought I was going to be physical therapy. I was like, okay, I need to start shadowing, because for the program, there's a program in my hometown that I want to get into. I could live at home and save some money. So I started shadowing a physical therapist right away. And coincidentally, it just kind of worked out this way. I was coaching a youth baseball team because my little brother's a freshman in high school, and I've been coaching him since he's been so little. And we're coaching a travel ball team. And one of the dads on the team is a president of a company, of a biomedical company in my hometown, actually. He's like, hey, we're looking for someone in the quality assurance department. And he's like, hey, come check it out. And I started working part-time there while I was shadowing. And then eventually it turned into a full-time gig that I still work there right now.
Wow. And when you say shadowing, you're shadowing a physical therapist at this point.
Yeah. So I started shadowing a physical therapist, and I did that for a while because you needed like 30 hours. And best thing I've ever done was the program required it. You need 30 hours of shadowing. And I got it in, and I'm just so glad they made me do it, because after about hour 15, I was like, dang. They do the same thing every day. And this is not a knock on PTs at all. Like, I think it would be super interesting. A material would be awesome, but I just decided it wasn't for me. I just, probably within the 30 hours, I for sure knew, okay, I need to look at other options. So then I started shadowing other careers as well.
And that's a good point. And that's, I wish medical schools would require a minimum number of shadowing hours, because that's exactly what shadowing does, is it gives you that insight and gives you that kind of nitty gritty of day in, day out, what life is like as a physical therapist or as a physician, and lets you know if that's what's right for you. And I'm kind of upset that you said they do the same thing every day, because in medicine, you kind of get that way too. And anything you're going to do in this world, there's a lot of repetition, which is why Allison loves to say, love your organ. You really have to love your organ, because day in and day out, that's what you're going to be doing and seeing. And so.
Right. And it's not that I didn't realize that medicine, they do the same thing every day. It was just, that was my first actual realization, like, oh my gosh, like they same thing every day. And then as I shadowed PA and doctors as well, I realized, a lot of this stuff is the same every day. But I just thought that the autonomy and the material, and it was a little bit different, something that I thought I could stomach a lot better day in and day out.
And as an athlete, I think typically athletes think, okay, physical therapist, I'm going to be out on the sports field hanging out with athletes, taking care of the football players and the baseball players. But in reality, you're in an office setting typically.
It was a bunch of octogenarians with hip surgeries.
Yes.
It definitely wasn't what I thought. Even in sports medicine clinic, it was not many young kids, because let's face it, young kids are invincible. So
Yes. All right. So That was your gap year. At what point did you go, oh crap, maybe medicine is what I want? And when you made that realization, how did you figure out what exactly you needed to catch up on as far as shadowing or volunteering or coursework?
Yeah, so it kind of spun off of the physical therapy shadowing, I said, okay, this isn't what I want to do, but I knew that the school in my town was starting up a PA program. I was like, okay, I should look into that. You know, they make, you know, 2 years, they make good money. Let's go look into that. So then I actually had a couple contacts. I started shadowing a couple PAs, and it was when I was shadowing a PA, I was like, okay, this is cool, but I think I want to do what the doctor does. And that kind of just drew me to that. And so I actually applied to the program, for the PA program, got accepted in the program, and then turned it down before I even took the MCAT. I was like, you know, this isn't what I want to do. I want to go into medicine. And so after that, I was just shadowing a little bit more with physicians in different settings at ER, ortho, and family practice. And just through shadowing, I realized, okay, this is what I want to do. And you know, I had a pre-med advisor back in the day at school, and I stayed in contact with her. But she's actually awesome. She's my mentor, but she wasn't the actual pre-med advisor for the school. I just switched because I enjoyed her. But so I didn't really know the pre-med advisors that well. But honestly, just listening through your podcast, it was a huge, so shout out to you, Ryan. It was a huge help because I knew what I needed to do a lot better just talking and listening to your podcast and looking up and researching online. So it's kind of a DIY how to get into med school.
Nice. You mentioned while you're shadowing the physician assistants, kind of having that realization, I want to do what the doctors do. What was it that you were doing day in and day out with the physician assistants that where you saw a difference and made you want to take that next level and be a physician?
Yeah, so the first thing was when I was in the ER and I was shadowing a PA, just the level of cases that they saw. I mean, if you came in and something was going on, it was always the doctor who was in charge. And it's just something that I've always innately had, just the desire to be in leadership roles. It's something that, I mean, every team I've ever been on, I've been a captain, and it's just, I really like being in leadership positions and calling the shots. So seeing, you know, just the caseloads and what type of cases doctors see versus PAs was one thing immediately that I just knew that was a difference, that I needed to be a doctor instead of a PA.
Okay. Awesome. So you got everything you needed by listening to this podcast that you're now a guest on. Congratulations.
It's surreal.
So you applied this year.
Correct.
What was the AMCAS application like?
Yeah, so so everyone can get the timeline straight, this is currently my second gap year. So this didn't all happen just in 1 year. So it was a year to decide to apply to med school and then a full year of applying to med school, which it really is. It takes forever. But the AMCAS application, oh boy, start early is my biggest piece of advice for everyone. It's a little intimidating. You go in there and there's 50 different tabs and you need a personal statement and all your information and make sure everything's spelled and formatted correctly. And it's kind of an intimidating thing to start, but I found that if you do little by little, it's really not that big of a deal. So the AMCAS for me was definitely a multi-day / probably week ordeal. I just do a little by little and I'd always edit it and check it. And I'd be sending it to my sister, who's an amazing writer, my aunt, who's an English teacher, and making sure everything is solid and, you know, grammatically correct. So it really was a pretty long and drawn out process. But if you tackle it little by little every day, it's not too bad.
Were there any hiccups along the way with the application as far as getting your letters of rec done or your personal statement, getting that to fit?
Oh, yeah. So personal statement, we'll start with that. And I got stories for all this stuff, but I probably did about 9 iterations of a personal statement. If that actually, I believe you looked at my personal statement once, so thank you for that. But my aunt also, she looked at it a bunch. She helped with a lot of college admissions stuff, and it was more undergrad, but she'd done stuff with med school as well, so she helped me a lot. And I did a bunch of personal statements, and that took forever. So plan on, you know, it taking a month, and then plan on another month, and you'll probably be safe doing that. But so the personal statement took a while. Letters of rec also, that was nail biter. Absolutely. I used the service Interfolio, which we've talked a lot about in the academy. That seems to be floating around using Interfolio. And for people who don't know, it's just a digital storing solution for letters of rec. So I could have a letter of rec and host it for like 2, 3, however many years I want to pay for it. And that was the greatest way. I just emailed my professors. They logged it on digitally. They gave me my letters and it hid there. But of course, one letter writer, my baseball coach, took quite some time, and I had to email him probably about 2 days before AMCAS officially opened to submit. And I was like, hey, I gave you, no joke, 6 months. I was like, I need it tomorrow. And he came through. So that was clutch. But
wow,
I almost didn't make the deadline, but I did.
Yeah. And that's a good lesson to learn. I think as students, we go through the process and it's like, okay, time for my AMCAS applications. And okay, I need to select letters to go to different schools. Oh, let me go ask my teacher for a letter. That's not the time to be asking for a letter of recommendation. You need to be asking for letters probably January, February timeframe so that they're ready in June or July.
Yep. I found that if you give them time, you know, they'll probably forget the first time. That's just how it goes because they're busy people. And so that way, if you give them tons of time and then remind them 2-3 times, yeah, it can get annoying, but most likely they're going to feel bad. They're like, oh shoot, I forgot again. And they'll get on it. So, but getting it early is key because I submitted my app. I know this goes against your advice, Ryan. I'm sorry, but I've submitted it literally the minute you could do it when AMCAS opened. I submitted it. I must've been one of the first people in the nation because I had it processed the next day. And whereas it usually takes people a month to process, I had mine in and out in a day. So
that's awesome. And I don't disagree with having your application done early and ready to go, but I typically recommend wait a day or two, make sure there's no kinks in the system. Because it was, so this year or last year, where AMCAS said, okay, we're closing for a week or two. There's a problem here. I think it was last year.
It was delayed a week this year.
It was this year? Yeah.
So I was all mad because I was like, no, I was super ready. And I'm like, all these procrastinators aren't ready. Like I had a friend, a teammate who's applying. And he's like, oh, right, another week. I was like, this is not fair. I was so ready.
Yeah.
But that was the Jordan method, getting ready super early.
Now that's awesome. And as we've said 1,000 times, having your application in on time is... not having it in on time is probably one of the number one reasons people don't get into medical school. Qualified students not getting into medical school because they don't turn their applications in on time.
Absolutely. I mean, I'm no world beater. You look at my stats and I shouldn't have gotten probably multiple acceptances, but I didn't. You can't tell me that being in early wasn't. I mean, I was in before people had applications in probably in terms of accepted. So It helped me. I'm no rock star, but it helped me for sure.
So let's talk about that. How did you choose what schools to apply to?
Yeah, so first things first, I downloaded the MSAR, you know, that AAMC program. It's like $20, I think, something like that. It's just a database of all the schools and what their average stats are and all that. And so that's pretty much how I based it. I knew I was going to do everything in Wisconsin because that's where I'm from. So we only have two schools, which stinks, but only one public. So that really, I mean, there's some schools that have five state schools and we only have one. So that was unfortunate. But so I knew I was going to be applying to a lot of private schools. I looked at the stats and knew that out of state public was pretty much a waste of money. So I might have applied to like one or two just to, see what happens. But other than that, I pretty much looked through all the private schools and was applying to all the private schools where I thought, you know, my stats would fit. I mean, I didn't apply to Harvard or anything like that, but I applied to things or schools where statistically I think I'd fit in and I had the best chance of getting in.
Okay. And so you turned in your application super early. How long did it take for you to start getting interview requests?
Oh, man. So secondaries came rolling in really fast. And that was another thing. I just tried to fill those out as fast as possible. I didn't have a secondary sit for more than probably a week. I was on top of that. You get to start reusing them after the first week. So that was great. Just make sure you edit out the school and so you don't send the wrong school name. But after that, I probably waited a little bit and I started getting them in August, I'd say. Yeah, I think early August. My first interview was late August. Yeah, my sister's birthday. So probably around mid-August, I started getting interview, invites, which is pretty darn early.
Yeah, that's awesome. And how many interviews did you go on?
I went to, let's see.
How many schools did you apply to total?
Yeah, I applied to 23 schools,
which is a lot.
In retrospect, I wish I could have those $2,000 back. Obviously, because it's so expensive applying to school. I didn't know at the time. I'm in and I don't have any regrets because it got me where I want to go. But, I could have, it's kind of funny. I could have been fine with applying to MCW, USIS, and Madison. I would have been okay. But I applied to a bunch, like 23, and I had, I took 4 interviews and had 5 invites. I declined one. So.
Okay. All right. What did you learn on the interview trail? Were there any surprises that you weren't expecting?
Yeah, the one thing that I guess I'm not gonna say made me angry, but one thing I wasn't a huge fan of was student interviewers. Not that I had some awesome experiences, I had some great people who interviewed me. That was fantastic. But I was surprised that, you know, I'd go talk to a physician or a teacher or lecturer at there, and then I talked to a student, and it seemed like at most places the student had the same weight in the decision that the lecturer or physician had, and that seemed kind of arbitrary to me. And you know, one school had one single interview, and you know, I fly halfway across the country for one half-hour interview. I think that's kind of crazy, but yeah, just kind of the student. I mean, I had good times, and I use it as a resource. I just pounded them with questions about the school, but it seemed crazy to me that they held the same weight as, you know, physicians. And not to say they can't, but most likely they don't have as much interview experience as the physicians. I know I wouldn't.
Mm-hmm. Okay. It's interesting that you mentioned that, because it's almost along the same lines as residency interviews. During your residency interviews, it's very different than medical school interviews, because it's more of a job interview. They're interviewing you to make sure that you fit, and you're interviewing them to make sure that you like it there and you can work with these people. And so I wonder if that's what they're trying to do with the student interviewees or interviewers.
That's a good idea. Yeah, I mean, because I used it as such. I wanted to see what they're about and how the school ticks and what they thought about it. So
yeah. Oh, that's cool. Did you do any MMI interviews?
I did not. I had just straight regular interviews. I kind of wish I would have done. That would have been an experience.
Yeah,
that would
have been good. All right. Interesting. All right. So you had 4 interviews. How many acceptances did you get?
I got 2 acceptances.
Awesome. And that was at where?
USIS. So Uniformed Services, for people who don't know that. The Military Medical School, okay. And the Medical College of Wisconsin.
Why did you apply to the Military Medical School?
It's been always something that I've thought about doing. You know, I actually have an old high school football teammate who's a third year now at USIS, and I saw he was going there, and he's not prior military. His family wasn't. And I was like, okay, that's like, whoa. That's how I first heard about this. I'm like, what is this? And I looked into it, and I was like, whoa, free school, and you get paid, and it's in the D.C. area. And I mean, I've always had, you know, the idea of that maybe I'd serve someday. It never worked out with college. I wanted to go to play sports in college, and it just never worked going through ROTC or something. So I looked at that and applied, and it just seemed, I love the place. That's for sure.
Yeah. That's awesome. And you obviously heard my interview with the dean there. So on the podcast,
Dr. Sagil,
Florida.
He's
Gator.
A great guy.
Yeah.
Oh, is he really?
He is a Florida Gator. Yeah.
He's great. He actually talked to him about hearing him on your podcast, and he's like, whoa, that's awesome, and maybe you can come to USIS and start the USIS podcast. I was like, oh, maybe Ryan will be my mentor.
That'd be awesome. We'll start a conglomerate of medical education podcasts.
Nice. I like it.
Awesome. So have you made your decision on where you're going? You have 2 acceptances. Have you made that final decision?
Yeah. I don't know if I said the second. It's the Medical College of Wisconsin.
Oh, yeah.
So there
okay.
we go. But I'm... still, I don't want to say where I'm going yet because it's still up in the air. May 15th is coming shortly, but I'm just waiting to hear back on a couple things. But I'm pretty much, I know one school I'm leaning 95%, but I'm leaving the options open until I'm 100% ready.
Are you waiting for another acceptance?
I am not, actually.
No.
I've kissed that goodbye. I did get waitlisted at 2 other places, but I'm not waiting for another acceptance. It's just I'm... you know, thinking, going through some things and taking some time and considering different situations and scenarios.
Okay. And that's something that's good to know for students that are applying, is that it takes a long time for this whole waitlist process to go through, and you have the drop dead date on when a student can actually only hold one acceptance to a medical school where they have to say, okay, this is the one school that I'm picking right now. You can still change your mind later, but you can only pick that one. So if Jordan, let's say that you are going to Medical College of Wisconsin, that's the one school that you've chosen. If you had the school that waitlisted you, if they said, okay, Jordan, we have a spot for you, you can then say, okay, I'm going to take that spot and drop Medical College of Wisconsin after this drop dead date of only holding one acceptance. So there's a lot of shuffling that goes on up until orientation, up until the actual start of medical school.
That's crazy. Yeah. And I feel terrible. So I'm trying to make a decision because I know there's some poor kid who's doesn't have an acceptance yet, and he's just waiting on pins and needles to hear back. So I'm trying to be considerate of that, but I also have to put my interest, you know, I worked hard, so I have to, you know, do my due diligence too.
Definitely. So you applied to the military medical school. Did you look into the HPSP scholarship at all?
Yes, I did. That was something I started filling out right away in the fall, pretty much as soon as I was applying. So it was definitely, I wanted to look at both options.
Okay. And how did you choose which branch of service that you applied to?
Well, I was listening to this podcast with this Air Force flight surgeon, and I had a buddy who's at USIS, and he's in the Air Force. And I've talked to a couple of people. I had a coworker whose father's in the Air Force talk to him. And just from the various people I've talked to with different branches, it just seemed like Air Force was probably going to be the best fit for me. So honestly, I only talked to the Air Force recruiter because I did some research before. And then once I started talking with more people, it made more and more sense. So the Air Force is the only one I've applied to as of right now, obviously.
Okay. And have you been accepted for that scholarship?
I have. I actually just found out. It was a crazy story. The other day, you know, I called my recruiter, like, hey, am I gonna hear back? And he's like, oh, there's been a problem with the system. It'll probably, you know, be mid-April. And literally the next day he calls and he's like, oh, by the way, you just got the scholarship. So
that's awesome. Ooh. Congrats.
Thank you. It was it felt really good, that's for sure.
That's awesome. Well, I look forward, hopefully one day, serving with you.
It would be an honor.
You're
that's
done
for sure.
And out. That'd be great. What with the application to HPSP, did you have any, what was your thinking behind that? Did you have any worries, concerns about doing that scholarship?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, it's coming from a non-military background. I didn't really know what to expect. So, and I still don't know what to expect, I guess, to that extent, but it's definitely there's some current concerns. That's for sure. So the biggest things, I'll just go ahead and hash them out right away. The biggest things that it took me the longest to think about were, I mean, just giving up your quote unquote freedom, not in terms of, you know, I'm giving up literally my freedom, but just in terms of, you know, I may not be able to go to the exact residency I want to go to. I may not be able to match right away into what specific specialty I want to go into. And I might be, you know, forced into a GMO tour or whatnot, things like that. But, you know, at the end of the day, those were the biggest things, is just, you know, not me just kind of being not selfish, but just worrying really, really about me instead of, you know, other things. But just, what if I wanted to do this specialty at this place, and, you know, the military doesn't offer anything like that. And so that was the biggest thing to get over, is just can I really trust the system and let go of it and just kind of, you know, hope for the best and we'll see what happens.
Yeah. And I tell everybody, including you, when we talked about it, that you have to be flexible. You have to be willing to give up a little bit of that freedom and total control and be flexible with what happens, because not everything is in your control, unfortunately, but there's a lot of upside.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. And that's the thing too. You know, people talk about, you know, one of the adages you'll see online is don't go into it if, you know, you don't want to be in the military at all. And they're like, don't even consider finances. But I think that's a lie too. I mean, I'd be lying to you if I said I was going to go HPSP with or without, you know, if my parents were so rich that I could pay for school, I mean, I probably wouldn't do it. But that being said, it allows me an awesome opportunity to, you know, go to school for free, and then while also doing something cool and serving and living someplace, you know, that I normally live. I know myself, I'm a homebody. My whole family lives in the area, and I would never, ever, ever leave if it wasn't for joining the military. So this is my way out for the time being.
Yeah, maybe that's good for you.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, yeah, it should be an adventure. That's the way I look at it, really, is it's an adventure, and, you know, you just got to be up for, I'm going to roll with the punches, so.
So what are you most looking forward to next year, the first day of medical school?
Oh, man, I'm nervous about the first day of med school, that's for sure. I mean, you just hear the horror stories of what it's like, but I'm really just looking forward to starting my path towards my eventual career and meeting a lot of cool people who are like-minded as well. You know, I've been working 2 years in the business world, and it's been good, and the company's been amazing, and they've been awesome and supportive of me. But I've definitely realized it's not my career. It's just kind of a job for the time being. But I'm just very excited to, you know, take that first step towards my actual career and my calling, and just being able to study awesome stuff. I mean, it's just such a privilege to be able to study medicine and, you know, be able to help, you know, fellow humans. I think that's kind of crazy when I think about it at times. And every once in a while, you know, my mom or my girlfriend will be like, oh, you're gonna be a doctor. And that's pretty crazy to think about. And I'm just really excited to get started towards, you know, my actual career.
That's awesome. What advice do you have for pre-meds now going through their journey, whether it's resources or mindset? What advice do you have for pre-meds out there?
Yeah, I guess the biggest thing that I learned throughout this whole process and that I'd like other pre-meds to take is just be patient. You know, a lot of kids, we're all type A. If you're a pre-med, and especially if you're listening to this podcast, I mean, if you're spending your free time listening to pre-med podcasts, you're really type A. And
dude, my podcast is much cooler than that.
No, your podcast is awesome. Don't get me wrong. It's, I mean, hey, Brian, I listen to every single episode. Don't get me wrong.
All right.
But I'm saying if you listen, I mean, if you're actively pursuing this, you're most likely really type A and really dedicated, and that's awesome. But also don't be afraid to take some time and kind of really explore what you want. I mean, I took 2 years off of school. I'm old. I'm an old geezer. I'm going to be 20, 25 starting med school, almost 26. So I'm a little older than most, but one of my best pieces of advice I could give someone is take a year off. If you're a little unsure and, you know, maybe want to check into some things, take a year off. I mean, for me, it completely shifted my entire focus. It went from only worrying about grades and worrying about this, that, and the other. And then I got in the real world and realized that it stinks to put it bluntly sometimes, you know, working in an office. It's awesome. It's great, but it's just not what I want to do. So, and also you learn some valuable skills like, you know, financial management, and, you know, you realize that debts, you do actually have to pay those back. It's not just free money. And that's been a huge lesson that I've learned while out in the real world is, you know, money management and just seeing very different things. So my advice would be take your time, really make sure this is right. And if you got to take a year off, take a year off. It's not the end of the world.
Yeah. Even if you don't have to, I would recommend taking a year off just to get that real world experience and that perspective of what it's like to be a non-student for once.
Yeah. I mean, you won't be weird. You're not going to be an outlier. I mean, I went to interviews and I was the norm. I might be a year older than most people, but I mean, it's honestly the kids who were 22 and coming straight out of school were more of the outliers than the people who'd taken a year off, at least.
Well, I hope you enjoyed that episode with Jordan. He's an awesome guy. I look forward to watching him grow as a medical student, as he is an academy member and will continue to interact with us through the academy. So that's awesome. I look forward to that. If you have any questions for Jordan or any questions in general, you can ask them at our show notes page, which you can get at medicalschoolhq.net/73, as in episode 73. There you can leave a comment for Jordan or a question for us, and we'll gladly get back to you as soon as we can. As I always like to do at the end of the podcast, I want to take time to thank you for leaving us a 5-star rating and review. I'm going to list 4 more of them today. Last week I mentioned that we had a bunch to catch up on, and I have 4 more awesome ones today. If you haven't taken the time to do this, I would, and Allison, we would greatly appreciate you take a couple minutes of your time to leave us a rating and review. It certainly helps us with the exposure in iTunes. If you listen on Stitcher, you can leave us a review there as well. If you just go to medicalschoolhq.net/iTunes to leave us a review in iTunes, or /Stitcher to leave us a review there. I want to thank Home Health Physical Therapist, who says, wow, he or she just recently stumbled upon this podcast and haven't stopped listening since. Thank you. I have M Now Lynn 11, who says, grateful for your podcast. Thanks a million. You're welcome. A million. Aspiring ER Doc says, every pre-med should listen. This is the best podcast I've found for pre-meds. Thank you, Aspiring ER Doc. I agree. And I have Eric and Candace, who say, the best medical school reference on the web with 2 exclamation points, not just 1. So thank you to those 4 people. I appreciate every one of you who takes the time to leave that review. I appreciate everyone who listens, whether or not you leave a rating or review. I just like the ratings and reviews as well. Come say hi to me. I'm on Twitter, Medical School HQ. Go say hi to Allison. She's Allison_MSHQ. I hope you learned a ton of great information today from Jordan and myself as we discussed his path into medicine And I hope you join us next time here at the Medical School Headquarters. Hey, are you still listening? Go to freemcatgift.com and download our brand new 30-plus page report on the most important pieces of MCAT information. Take your knowledge of the MCAT to the next level by going to freemcatgift.com and downloading the free report today.